2023, the time is 9:03 a.m. I now call the meeting of the Finance Commission to order pursuant to Chapter 551 of the Government Code. Sharon McCormick has contacted me and indicated that she would not be able to attend this meeting due to a conflict. She has requested that her absence be excused. And in accordance with the Finance Code 11.103, the Commission members will take a vote to either accept or deny this request. All in favor of excusing the absence, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. Ayes have it, the excused absence carries. At this time, Commissioner Cooper, please conduct a roll call.
For the record, Philip Holt.
Present.
Bob Orkoff.
Present.
Hector Sutter.
Present.
Marty Green.
He's present.
Will Lucas.
Present.
Les McCauley.
Here.
Sarah McCormick is absent. Rosie Morris.
Present.
Vince Fuente.
Merry Christmas.
Vince Fuente. Oh,
here.
And Laura Warren.
Here.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you. If there's anyone wishing to address the commission during the time of the public comment, please fill out a witness affidavit form and bring it up to the front. Public comments on non-agenda items are limited to 5 minutes and agenda items to 10 minutes. Any comments relating to a rule may be made at this time of the rule discussion. In accordance with the Finance Commission's policy on public testimony, public comments are not allowed on agenda items related to the final rule adoption, except under majority vote of the Commission, in which the comments are limited to 10 minutes. Do we have any audience members wishing to provide a general comment today? Also, for the record, we've got a temporary system up here, so please speak louder today if you are presenting to the Commission. That would be very helpful for all of us. Before we take up consent agenda items A1, C2, D2, and D3 in a single vote, I want to state that any commission members may request that an agenda item be removed from the consent agenda and be placed on the regular agenda so that it may be discussed and voted on individually. We'll now move on to item number 4, Finance Commission Operations.
Mr. Chairman, the three agencies are obviously busy toward the end of the year, the calendar year. And as y'all know, the legislature has gone through its third and now fourth special session. The fourth session, there were some bills passed regarding to the border wall funding and some, So other than that, Mr. Chairman, that's what we got.
Okay, members, I failed to do a vote for our motion for the consent agenda. So items A1, C2, D2, and D3, without discussion, do I hear a motion to adopt that?
Will Lucas, so moved.
Thank you. Second.
Laura Warren, second.
Thank you. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. Motion carries. Audit Committee report. At this time, I'll be turning over the Audit Committee section to Chairman McCauley.
We'll now move on to item 5. Chairman Holt, please give us the Audit Committee report.
The Audit Committee would like to make a motion that the Finance Commission approve the appointment of the new Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund Grant Advisory Committee member, Andrea Ferreira.
Coming upon recommendation from the Audit Committee, no second is needed. Is there any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. The motion passes. Chairman Holt.
Thank you, sir. We'll now move on to items 6 through 10. Commissioners, do you have any items you need to be discussed in open sessions for items 6 through 10?
No.
No, Commissioner. Very good. We'll now move on to Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending. Commissioner Arretta.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we go to page 17, we'll run through the grid regulation division activities first, and then we'll touch on mortgage. Just a couple of overall statements to begin with. I think certainly the big news this week was the announcement and the signaling from the Federal Reserve with respect to the interest rate and the possibility of some interest rate declines next week. That, of course, has implications for all the markets, and specifically, too, on the mortgage market. We'll comment on that just briefly when we get to that. And I will not, I study enough economics to know that I'm not going to make any comment or make any kind of estimate on what's going to be going on or what will happen. So I won't say that, but I think the risks are pretty clear, and one is that they move too slowly in terms of moving rates, and the other is that they don't increase rates in case they need to, in case they ease prematurely. So a lot of that, I think, will be discussion that we'll be seeing in the press and in our industry. With respect to the banks, the savings banks in particular, the same kind of issues that we've spoken about before, continue out there, but continue to be managed in terms of sensitivity to market risk and liquidity, and the management, the adaptability of management of the savings banks to be able to adapt to their conditions. But they're generally quite stable, and you can see that from what we'll be going through here in just a second. And then on the mortgage industry, we'll see what does occur there. The biggest issues there, of course, are the rates, where they are relative to where they were a year ago or even 2 years ago. And so we're looking at just the quick consensus of people is that, of observers in the industry, is that they expect next year, given that there is a decline or a reduction by the Federal Reserve in the Fed funds or the discount rate, then that it will settle somewhere in the mid 6% during next year. But again, that's just an estimate on where things will be. At this point, it remains to be seen. I think we've seen enough to know that and lived enough to know that until that happens, we don't know exactly what will happen there. But I think it just continues to show that it's a dynamic industry. And so we'll continue to follow that. And very important for us to be able to, in our responsibility, to continue with the safety and soundness on the risks and with respect to the mortgage industry to make sure that everything in our examinations and our supervision there is done responsibly. So going down into the specifics, you can see that as of the end of September, we still had 21 savings banks. The comment that I made earlier that they generally, we think they are stable. We say down here, you can see that we have 3 informal supervisory actions that are in place, but they are well capitalized, generally speaking, in terms of asset quality, they're solid, and we don't see anything that we yet would consider to be systemic. A lot of idiosyncratic, I think, is the term when you have particular institutions that need to have a management or have management addressing some of the issues that came up. We continue with the quarterly offsite reviews in terms of our supervision, so we stay on top and in touch with the banks. If we look at the metrics that we always go through, the capital position, and it's on the next page, on page 18, is a graph that does show the capital and where it stands with respect to total risk-based capital and Tier 1 leverage, and they're solid, continue as a median to be well above the minimums. On the second, or that lower part of that page, if you look at the earnings, while there has been some, of course, impact on earnings because of the squeeze on the net interest margin in the industry, that the earnings, it continues to reflect that net interest margin, but they're still healthy in terms of what they have and no capital is at risk. And then if on the next page, on page 19, in terms of the market risk, the sensitivity to changes in the rates, we're still, in terms of the long-term assets to total assets, still in a strong position there as a median for the industry there. And then if we look at the bottom half of that page, liquidity risk in terms of the loan-deposit ratio, and in terms of long-term assets, and that is dependence on long-term assets, again, the industry is well-positioned and doing well. In terms of the market risk, I think the risk to interest rate changes over time. Again, in the banks that we are responsible for regulating, things seem to be stable. Again, I mentioned the informal supervisory actions, but those are being addressed, and we stay in touch with those banks. If I move now to, on page 20, the mortgage regulation division, the first news or the first portion of the report, of course, on page 20 and 21, talks about the total license registrations, both for entities and then for the individual residential mortgage loan originators. The detail on that in terms of how many we have on the licensing activity report on page 21, I won't read through all the numbers because I'm sure you have read through those, but generally speaking, for both the entities and for the individual mortgage loan originators, we're now at December 15th. The renewal period started in the 1st of November and goes through year end. And both are right at about 60% in terms of renewals rates that have taken place. We do expect that they will not be as high as it was last year, that there will be some entities and some RMLOs or residential mortgage loan originators who will not renew their licenses. But 60% right now, that renewal rate is consistent with what we were seeing a year ago and the year prior to that. On the mortgage examination activity report, What's notable there is that the overall number of examinations actually increased, but the number of individual licenses examined decreased. And the reason for that was at the beginning of last year, we had a number of large mortgage companies or mortgage banks that were being examined, and they happened to have a lot of people, obviously, that they employ, and so that's why the individual licenses were. We are running not quite where we would like to be with respect to the number of examinations done, but the explanation for that is that we've done some intensive training during the first quarter of this year with respect to switching over to the state examination system and implementing that, and that comes from the Conference of State Banking Supervisors. That's an effort that we've been working on for the last year. We now have people trained, all of our examiners trained on that, and so we should be able to catch up through the remainder of the year to be able to produce and conduct the number of examinations that we had projected. In terms of outreach and training, on page 22, our senior review examiner, Justin Acola, has been very active in his participation on the Performance Standard Committee and also on the National Test Maintenance Committee. And then William Purse, who's the Director of Mortgage Regulation, he is very actively involved with the NMLS Policy Committee, and so he has meetings monthly, and then from time to time, as referenced here, they gather in D.C. so they can go through that. And so we are well positioned, I think, in terms of knowing what's going on in the industry there. We also had our Mortgage Industry Day back in November, which is what we do every year. The department holds a Mortgage Industry Day and held that up in just north of Dallas and made a presentation to the industry. And as importantly as the presentations, had the opportunity to meet one-on-one with a number of the attendees who came to our Mortgage Industry Day. With respect to operations, the important points there, and that starts on page 23, is that we have submitted the annual report on the department's fiscal year 2022 expenditures for risk management activities. We submitted that to the State Office of Risk Management. I mentioned earlier that the risk management program review is scheduled to be performed in May, so we'll be preparing for that. And then if you move to page 24, we at this time, and look at the different human resource information that we have here, this time we have 64 regular full-time employees. We've been pleased. We didn't, in the last couple of months, we have not had a lot of resignations. And in fact, we've added three, management analyst and administrative assistant, and another customer responsiveness investigator. And in terms of outreach, we did have another one of our quarterly agency training programs where all of the members of the department participated in that on a virtual basis. And we covered the strategic plan because that's coming up next year. We explained the process on the strategic plan. And then we also had training with respect to information resources and human resources as well. On page 25, we go into the consumer complaints activity report. And in September and October, we had a volume that was slightly lower from last year in terms of the complaints, again, reflective probably of the overall volume being down on the mortgage side. The mortgage bankers continue to be the kind of the focus, the biggest of the complaints received. And then because of it helps with the lower number of complaints that are there, that we're running about 99% of complaints aging in terms of 120 or less that are resolved. And then in the last piece of information there, in the closed complaints, and I'm on page 26, we had a total of 219 complaints that were closed. I will note that we had a situation that developed over the last 6 weeks. A couple of larger, more prominent mortgage companies did have ransomware attacks, and so we had a number of complaints that did come in related to that. People were saying that they weren't getting credit, they weren't able to confirm that payments had been made, and wanted to know about if their information was at risk, and so we've had an increase in complaints related to that. I did not break that out as a subset of our total complaints. I'm not sure if we should be able to track that. I'll check on that and see, but that was something that did come up, and it's not unexpected. That did also serve to remind us all of the importance of cybersecurity, not just in our own operations, but in those that we regulate. And so that is something that has been really front and center within the Mortgage Regulation Department in the last month, noting that and then responding to that.
Pardon me.
Yes.
You wouldn't necessarily know, but do you happen to know if of those ones that got attacked, how many of them actually paid out?
How many, pardon?
How many got attacked and how many actually paid the ransom? And again, that may not be something you track.
Okay, there are actually some news that just came this morning. I'll ask William Purse, the Director of Mortgage Regulation, to comment on that because he's been tracking it very closely.
I guess there's a speaker up here. Yes, my name is William Purse. I'm the Director of Mortgage Regulation. And I guess the companies who have had this issue about cybersecurity, they have been informed by the Federal Bureau of Investigation not to disclose what else they had paid. But from the conversations we've had, they've really just removed all their systems in place. And what they've been doing is slowly re-engaging their systems. So, I mean, if you were going to ask me to put all my chips in, I would say they did not pay the ransomware, and that they have really just tried to reposition themselves by loading the systems on as they could as time goes by. But at this point, they will not publicly say and have not announced anything to the regulators about whether or not they would pay for these ransomware attacks.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I have some mention on that. In my other part of my life, the CIA last year had some guys, I met them, who stole back nearly $650 million that had been taken out of companies illicitly through the espionage, you know, cracking into their systems. Mm-hmm. The two guys who did it are like 28 years old. I met with them. And I was asked if I had any questions, so I just asked them if they thought the government was paying them enough money. And they said, I also asked the question, can you routinely break into the systems over there? Can they do that to us? And they said, right now there's a standoff. If we break into the system, not the bad guys, but the government over there, they said they'll know we did it. And if they did it to us, we would know they did it. So it would be an act of war. Just tell you that.
Mr. Renner, is there anything that we need to be doing differently from a regulatory standpoint in terms of the reporting of the cyber attacks or anything else from that, just to review?
I wouldn't say that we have to do anything differently, but I think we've certainly had discussions and we've known that in our examination process that the importance of diving deeper into the cybersecurity and the provisions that are taken, the planning that they have done in preparation for anything, if something were to happen, that's something that is a more prominent part of the discussion now in the examinations, and should be.
Is there anything about the reporting of that to the agency that we need to look at strengthening or?
So at this point, we have asked those licensees to respond to us, and there's a multi-state mortgage committee and the non-depository supervisor committee, so we're having ongoing conversations. But we have communicated with both entities and advised them to keep us abreast of the changes. And there's also a reporting requirement by the Attorney General's office if more than 250 Texas were involved. So we have informed both of the mortgage companies once they actually have a determination of the number of individual Texas that were affected, that they need to report that information to the Attorney General's office. So we have communicated that to them. And so at this point, they have not yet communicated that change to, or that number to the Attorney General's office for either one of them.
They did report it to the department, though, when that news happened?
Well, I wouldn't say they reported to the department, but we were aware of it, and we got in touch with them.
So, Commissioner Redd, bring it closer home, and I apologize if this has been covered prior to me, but I think two questions. Is our backup in the cloud? And the second is, if we were to be attacked, how many hours would it be before we could be back up?
You're talking about the finance commissioner, or you're talking about the department?
Your department. Talking,
in our department, in our case, we do everything, and all our support is with DIR. And so that's where our support is. If we were to come back up, I can answer that better for you because we're going through a tabletop exercise later. Actually, we don't tell everyone exactly the date, but in the first couple of months of the year, and I can tell you then how quickly we were able to get back up. But on paper, we should be able to get back up, I would say quite quickly, but I don't know that it's quickly enough.
I think some of this discussion should probably help in an executive session or in a public setting, so let's just hold off on any more details until we get into it.
And we'll have that, as I say, we'll have some experience that we can talk to you about and how that would work.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. But we know the importance of getting back online, being available.
Thank you.
And we've also seen that, I think, and Director Persis has seen that with the mortgage companies, how they reacted to it, and having a plan in place in the event of something is critically important.
Because as they say, it's not if, it's when.
I won't comment. I might nod my head.
Any other questions?
Safe, members.
Thank you, Mr. Persis.
Thank you, sir.
I will now ask General Counsel June Berry to come up and provide the legal enforcement activity report.
Good morning, Chairman Holt, members. June Berry, City and Mortgage Lending. Our report resumes bottom of page 26. And really, we'll be turning to page 27. Here you have our typical reporting for September and October, given where we are in the fiscal year. And we can look forward to quarterly reporting beginning in February. And so turning now to page 27, I just want to update you verbally on our litigation matters, the first matter being the Tim Schoenbauer litigation in JP in Dallas County. Nutshell version to save time is Mr. Schoenbauer would like to be on the lender-placed insurance as an insured and thought that the best way to get there would be to sue our agency. The update here is that there is no update. He has filed nothing. He is the plaintiff, and so it is up to him to move the ball, and he hasn't done so. But we are thinking there will be movement early next year. Second, Mr. Julius Lamont North has an action in Harris County. The good news here is that on November the 21st, there was a hearing on our plea to the jurisdiction and motion to dismiss, and I have to say that motion was granted and the case was dismissed, so this item will fall off your report, thankfully. Page 28, typical reporting, rulemaking, gift reporting, and then you've heard about the legislative activities already from Commissioner Cooper. And that's really all I wanted to verbally update you all on, unless you have any questions.
Members, any questions for Mr. Berry this morning?
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Member.
That would conclude the report.
Thank you, Commissioner. We'll now move on to the Department of Banking. Commissioner Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So let me mention I've got some comments earlier on cyber attacks, not just ransomware attacks, cyber attacks. There are various requirements for financial institutions, banks, to have to report to the agencies if they've had an attack. And for instance, there's one that, depending on what's released, has to be reported to the Attorney General. So a lot of that is going on right now. But mentioning ransomware, I think I reported to y'all last meeting that SBS, along with the states and the U.S. Secret Service, we released, I believe it was in October, maybe in November, what we call RSAT, Ransomware Self-Assessment Tool, that it's an update from the one that was released in October 20. Where our financial institutions can use that for self-evaluation. We did a post-mortem nationwide on the banks that actually had been hit, and we used that post-mortem. I'm not supposed to say post-mortem, it's after action reports. We took that and the work group put together this update on the RSAT. And we released it, and we had 1,500 bankers on the release call that we had. And so far in Texas, we basically require it, our banks to use RSAC. In some states, it's voluntary. We think it's because it's. I think you said it. If you haven't been hit, you will be hit. It's so important. And we are taking the RSAT that was designed for banks and working on it for the non-depository side, MSB side, and hopefully for the mortgage side. So there's going to be a lot of work done in that. So, continuous efforts, I will say. I'm going to make some other general comments. I'd like to introduce a few new people here. And so in the back, we have our new HR manager, Pam Pennington. Pam, stand up. Pam started on Monday.
All right.
So she's been here like a whole week. So we're really glad to have Pam. And then y'all know this, that through a release, that Robert Nichols, our new general counsel, started on November the 6th, and you'll hear from Robert shortly. So we're really glad to have them. And then talked about new folks. Need to mention a retirement, Sammy Chadley, who y'all know. Sammy's been with the state system for 28 years and been with the Department of Banking for 11, and Sammy will be retiring at the end of the year. So
congratulations.
We wish Sammy well.
What is he, like 39 years old or what?
Okay. Starting on the report, well, let me miss one other thing. CSBS, Conference of State Supervisors, who y'all have all heard about. I'm on the board, former Chairman Emeritus. They do a lot for advancing the state system. Advocacy group for us. Did a lot of training for state regulators. John Ryan, who some of you knew, John, untimely death. He was our CEO about 2 years ago. In the interim, affectionately called him my brother, Jim Cooper, has been serving as our CEO. Jim is retiring at the end of the year, and we have, after a nationwide search, it took about basically 3 months, we've hired a new CEO, starts in January. His name is Brandon Milhorn. I think Brandon will be coming down to Texas soon, and we'll have him here to meet y'all. But I think somebody that's really going to be able to help us move forward. Brandon currently, up until last week, he served as the chief of staff for FDIC Vice Chairman Travis Hill. And then prior to that, he served as chief of staff for FDIC Chairman Eleanor McWilliams, so he's somebody we all know, and started his work out of college and law school with the CIA, so he's been involved in a lot of things, so I'm really glad to have him. All right, so starting on our report on page 33, this is the same information that was presented to y'all last time, so I won't go into a lot of detail. 213 banks, $432 billion in assets. If you go to the next page, basically, again, the same information on our problem banks. You will see that we would bump it around the bottom at 7, or then last time we reported that there would be 13, or there are 13. Whether that's a trend or not, I don't know. The Texas bank report came out to y'all electronically in December. If you haven't read it, I would recommend that you read it. If you will read my opening comments and then read some of the articles that are behind that, and then there's some data, I think it'll kind of indicate where we think things are going. Again, 13 problem banks. We say that we would like the number to be 3 to 5%. So 13 is, my math is right, is 6%. To put things into perspective, at the tail end of the Great Recession, our number of problem banks reached 58, and that was 18%. And that was probably, the financial institutions are a lagging indicator of the economy. That's just the way it always has been. I think it always will be.
Commissioner, so, how many of those 50 banks are still around? Are they all still around? Or did they sell, consolidate, or did they move?
Most of them are still around. We had five of our banks failed during that 10-year period. I think generally most of them are around. But we try to get in when a bank is rated 3, I think I've told y'all before. But the FDIC doesn't call those problem banks until they're rated 4. We call them problem banks if they're rated 3 because we like to get in, and I call it stop the bleeding. And so we have a pretty good history of turnaround by doing that. And we have some tools that really help us if required. So again, read the Texas Bank Report if you would. There's some very interesting information in there. Again, on page 35, same information as last time. On page 36, we're talking about the conferences and everything. A couple of things I'd like to mention. And I'm on the FDIC Advisory Committee of State Bank Regulators. We had a meeting in October. CSBS had a cyber IT school event here in Austin in November. And so we had IT examiners from all around the country come here in Austin and talk about all these issues that y'all are talking about now, and seeing where everybody was statewide or nationwide. And then I want to mention that, let's see where it is. I guess that's it. Beginning on 37, applications and process, that's the same information as last time, but if you look on page 38, if y'all remember several months ago, I told you that our applications were getting a little bit behind and we needed to do some changes. We did that. We're changing this report up, and you will see that the number of applications had declined somewhat. I don't think that that's a trend. I've mentioned before that they're also more complicated. We have a lot of MSBs there, and that's where a lot of the crypto activities come into play. We did have one of our banks purchase the First National Bank of Jasper, or merged into the First State Bank of Livingston. So our number of banks under supervision did not go up, but the assets went up about $311 million, excuse me. And then 39, same information as last time. And then on 40 in the division activities, this is what I was trying to remember. Jesse Salcedo is attending the Governor's Executive Management Development Program. Jesse, are you through now?
Yes, sir.
You're finished. Are you graduated?
Yes.
All right.
With honors.
Yes.
It's really, most of us have been to that. It's really a good program. So congratulations, Jesse.
Thank you.
All right. Then on the HR side, I've said we have a new HR manager, but let me talk about some of the activities there. Y'all remember, I think in October of last year, we had this issue of we were understaffed. We couldn't hire enough people at the top, so we decided we needed to do something where we could hire more at the bottom. And if you remember, I indicated that we had hired, I think, 18 people. And so a little over 5 months ago, those people came on and they started this new school that we developed. So we had 18 people start. This week on Tuesday, we had the graduation of the first class, and 17 folks, I call them kids, graduated. So we have 17 new examiners. That program is going to continue. Right now, we have, if you look on 41, it talks about the activities on the existing posting. But right now, we have hired 12 new financial examiners that will start on January the 8th, and then we will hire some more in June, and we're going to kick off another school. So we have very, I will tell you that being around that class of new students and their enthusiasm and their background and what we were able to accomplish, I think it's nothing short of extraordinary. I'm really proud of our team that worked on all of that. More to come. And again, on page 41, it shows the positions that we have open. For instance, at the top one, we have three positions open. Again, those people have already been hired, but we will continue to be hiring through the remainder of starting next year. It mentions on the bottom that we have this HR manager position, but obviously that's closed now. And then page 43 goes over some of the turnover. It's, I would say right now it's kind of normal. And again, everything else I think is generally normal. I believe that our school, it normally takes us a little over 4 years to get an examiner commissioned. Maybe closer to 5 years, but we think our school process and the other things that we've implemented that hopefully we'll get some of these folks that will be able to get their commission right at the four-year mark, so that will really help our group. So that's all that I have for the general operations. If you don't have any questions, I'd like to call up our new general counsel, Robert Nichols, to give the legal update.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, Chairman, Commission members. Again, I'm Robert Nichols, the General Counsel for the Department of Banking. Beginning on page 53, and this will just be pages 53 and 54, under Bank and Trust Supervision, we've had one consent order that was in October for concerning Herring Bank. That basically was just a consent order joint with the FDIC requiring the bank to do some remediation from an IT exam. Under non-depository supervision, we had one consent order in October and November for unlicensed money transmission. That's blockchain. There was a penalty involved with that, and they agreed to stop operations. We had two consent orders that were simply extensions of temporary licenses, and that was BitGo, and looking on page 54, that was also automatic payroll systems. We had a consent order for ACI Worldwide, and I'll explain this one briefly. You may be familiar, but this is a joint settlement agreement and consent order between 44 states and territories regarding ACI's use of real customer data in a systems test, which resulted in erroneous debits and credits to customer accounts. Luckily, almost 100% of the debits and credits were reversed, and there was a penalty of $9,599,000 and change, and that will be split amongst the states and territories. There were also increased compliance requirements with that. And then as the last order we had was a final order for SCI, Texas Funeral Services. You may also be familiar with this one. This one went to a SOA hearing. It stems from a situation where they applied for a certificate of authority to operate a perpetual care cemetery. There were some issues with their application with the information they provided. By the time it came to the SOA hearing, they were able to straighten out those issues and alleviate concerns, and they have now been issued that certificate of authority. Moving on to a public information request, from October 1st through the end of November, we received and responded to 31 requests for public information addressed to the Department of Banking and received 8 inquiries from the Ask a Question feature. And we had one request for the Finance Commission. As for gifts, there were none during this period. So pending your questions, that's all I have.
Members, any questions today for Mr. Nichols?
No, thank you.
Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this time, I'd like to call up our Assistant General Counsel, Jesse Moore, to discuss rules.
We'll go to consent, excuse me, to the rules.
Yes.
Good morning, members. Thank you for having me here. I'm Jesse Moore, Assistant General Counsel with the Texas Department of Banking. Here to discuss the proposed changes to our corporate activities rules for state chartered banks. The proposed preamble starts on page 71 of your packet and goes through page 82. These proposals arise out of the four-year rule review that we did last year, same as with the Rule 12 that I discussed last meeting, pretty minor changes, mostly follow some changes to other federal and state laws and regulations, update the cross-references there. We also have a few clarifications to some of the rules about submissions of documents and reproductions for state bank corporate activities. I think that pretty much summarizes it, and I won't take too much more time unless there are any questions on it.
Any questions, members?
No, just to the new legal counsels, welcome to the team.
I've been here a little while longer, but thank you. The recommendation for the voting discussion is on page 70 of the packet.
Is there anyone wishing to address the commission for Department of Banking's rule item number 3 today? Seeing none, do I have a motion to approve the proposal and publication for comment of amendments in 7 Tag Part 2, Chapter 15 concerning corporate activities by state chartered banks?
So moved, Marty Green.
Thank you, sir. Second?
Second, Laura Warren.
Thank you. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. Motion carries.
Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you.
That concludes, well, let me mention on page page 83, I don't believe this requires a vote, but we have Ray Boone has been part of our advisory group. Mr. Boone's, this is on the funeral home side, Mr. Boone, short bios on 83. He replaces Amy Biggs. This is the public member, a public member of the group, and so we really appreciate Mr. Biggs' activity during the time. I don't believe that requires it.
He's not replacing Amy Biggs. Rebecca. Mr. Boone is replacing Rebecca.
I'm sorry. That's right. My apologies. So we do require a vote.
So at this time, do I hear a motion to approve the appointment of Ray Boone as a consumer representative and reappointment of Amy Biggs as the insurance representative to the Guarantee Fund Advisory Council for the period of January 1st of 2024 through December 31st of 2025?
Laura Warren, so moved.
Thank you, ma'am. Second?
Will Lucas, second.
Thank you so much. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. Motion carries.
All right, that concludes our report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Pettijohn.
Can I take a vote on Ray as well?
Yes. That's it. Okay, sorry.
All right, so we need a vote for Amy Biggs also.
Yeah,
so,
the Amy
Knight
needs
a new
Ray.
I thought they were both in that motion.
They were both.
They were both.
I did both.
They were both.
They were both.
I didn't hear
Ray.
They
were both.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. They were both.
Okay.
Commissioner Pettijohn.
Sorry.
That's okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. First up, somewhat discussing industry status, I wanted to share with you our annual publication on the annual of the availability, quality, and pricing of financial services report. You have a separate bound copy of this document in front of you. This report fulfills several statutory mandates for reporting certain data to the legislature. It contains the compilation of annual report submissions from our many of our regulated entities. The report will compare financial products, it highlights emerging products, and it also highlights low-cost lending programs. It spotlights economic indicators and trends that provide context to the markets for financial services in Texas, such as, you know, some of the observations that we see now is that the broader market has tightened the lending standards, and is affecting more of our marginal or subprime borrowers. Delinquency rates have increased steadily, and the sensitivity to rising interest rates have affected really all financial service markets, as you know, mortgage, auto, consumer finance. But there's some economic discussion related to that. Also, beginning on page 29 is a section that contains data related to national trends on the sale and financing of motor vehicles. There's a number of these indicators that I kind of share with you, two or three of them, or five maybe, at the start of many of our Finance Commission meetings, but this is a nice report that has a lot of that data in there. We have provided this report to the legislative leadership as required, and it is posted on our website. We're really happy to give you a copy of this. We're really proud of this report. I think it's really well done, and I think it contains a lot of really important information about the financial services market in Texas. I want to extend my compliments and appreciation to Carl Hubenthal. Carl, stand up. And his team, including Lee Henry, for their good work on the preparation of the report. So we, or maybe I should say Carl, would be happy to answer any questions that you have about the report.
When you say legislative leadership, is there specific state reps or senators that this is being presented to?
We typically provide this report. I mean, it's available to anybody, but we provide it to the lieutenant governor, to his staff, to the Speaker of the House, and then to the chairs of the respective committees that have oversight over our agencies. So that would be the Senate Business and Commerce Committee and the House Pensions, Investments, and Financial Services Committee. So we provide those to those offices. And, of course, it's available to others that would like it.
I'm sorry, so House Pension and what?
Pensions, Investments, and Financial Services Committee. I know, it's a long name. PIFS.
And there's a PDF available on the website?
Yes, there's a PDF available on the website, which I could send you the link if you prefer, but
okay.
Thought you might want to flip through some nice, pretty color pictures.
I'm sorry, who's the Senate committee?
Business and Commerce.
Okay. Thank you.
So, there's a number of statutory requirements that require us to produce a report by December 1st on a number of these activities, including there's information about the distribution of lenders by the location. There's a number of statutory requirements that we fulfill with this report, but we've been compiling it and continue to submit that report. Thank you, Carl. Moving on to, unless there are any other questions, moving on to the reports in the book. Starts on page 87. First up, talking about our examination activity program. We're through the first quarter of FY24. We're running just a little bit behind, about 5% as the end of November. However, if I look at year-over-year comparison, at least through October, we're running 20% ahead of where we were last year. So that's pretty normal for us for the first part of the year, as you can read in some of the material. We've spent a lot of time on examiner development. We tend to do that in the first quarter of the year, and there's been some significant activity in that area, as well as a number of either large enterprise exams or multi-state exams that we've been participating in, which a lot of times those you don't see the activity show up, so to speak, on the scoreboard, we'll say, until later in the year, because that activity continues to go on. You'll see, though, we still have some significant training examiner development activities scheduled throughout even into the next year as we continue to develop our examiner staff and get more examiner certified in particular industries and in particular areas. And I think we're doing a really good job at how we've developed our internal training program and continue to progress folks through various levels of our career path and continue to round out some development for those folks. And then, like Commissioner Cooper talked about, development of new examiners and new classes, we do have plans to fill a new class of examiners beginning in June. And so we'll be starting our recruitment activities on that early into the next year. So, The examination report's on page 88, and really the acceptable level of compliance is the bottom of 88, top of 89. The chart on 88 is just a couple of months, but you know our target benchmark is 85%. We want entities above 85%. So for the exams that we've conducted so far, things are looking very positive for compliance rates. And then the trailing 12 months also looks fairly good. One industry is down a little bit below that benchmark. We hope that'll trend back up over the year. Consumer assistance complaints year over year up about 12%. Which is a little bit interesting, but we continue to process those timely. So we see information, you see the standard information about the types of complaints. I know we've been talking for a while about allegations that dealers were refusing to accept outside financing, but those have now fallen out of our top three complaint types. So I think there's a lot going on in the market, especially with rates that may have sort of changed the calculus on that situation. On page 91 is the ratio of complaints to the active licensees and registrants. That's still the same pattern in terms of industries and their relationship to one another, at least for those first four. And those have remained consistent since last April. Moving on to licensing on page 92, we are currently in the renewal cycle for a number of our licensees. We've got about, as of yesterday, about two-thirds of our regulated lenders have renewed. About half, I believe, of the credit access businesses have renewed. So we're nearing the end of that cycle. Renewal closes December 31st. We'll continue to send out renewals. We expect about 90% of most of those groups, more than 90 or above, to continue and renew. So we'll be monitoring that and continuing to communicate with those entities to be sure that they renew timely. And then application processing, we've been improving on our processing of business license application processing. We're about 4% ahead of our pro rata projections. In terms of a volume of pending license applications, we've averaged, we've received about 114 in September and October, which is running a little bit ahead of what we projected. And so we're still watching and seeing sort of what kind of what we expect in terms of the market, but I think we're seeing a little bit of strength and continuing to receive those business license applications. And while they may decline a little bit over the year, I think we're looking at some stronger activity, at least so far. So moving on to administration on page 93, there's some information about our financial education activities. I just wanted to mention that on Wednesday this week, we participated or hosted a joint webinar with the Department of Banking. Our two agencies co-hosted that webinar on related to surviving the holidays, and so we continue to try to work together in response to our efficiency recommendations back from Sunset, and we continue to work together on some of those activities. In terms of communications, I wanted to mentioned that on October the 24th, our staff met for our agency-wide conference at the state capitol. Our theme was focused on building organizational capacity. I really want to thank Chairman Holt for attending and presenting, providing us with some inspiring remarks and encouraging us as he had kicked off our conference. And it was a really great day. We also were fortunate to welcome the Honorable Dale Wainwright as our keynote speaker. He's a former Texas Supreme Court Justice and now serves on the Public Safety Commission with our former Finance Commission member, Larry Law. And so we were grateful for his words of wisdom as he shared with us on that day. It was a very good day for our staff to be together and to do some team building as well as work on some projects in a way in terms of some roundtable discussions and ideas development that will lead us, I think, position us into perhaps our strategic planning cycle, which will come beginning in the spring, as well as just different ways that we can collaborate better as an organization and build capacity within our organization. So I really appreciate all the work of the staff that went into preparing that, the folks that presented. It was a good day. It was a good event. And then I think that's really the primary. There's some more information if you're interested on human resources and information technology. Quarterly reports will be in the next report. We didn't include them because it was the same information. But and accounting, we've submitted our annual financial report, working on our annual non-financial report. But I'm happy to answer any questions about operations before we go to legal report. All right, if there are no questions, Matt, will you please come up, provide the legal report?
Good morning, Matt Nance, General Counsel, Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. Our legal department report starts on page 96. Before I get into that, I wanted to welcome our new staff attorney, Vivek Vedanarayan. He's back there. Joining us as our new Assistant General Counsel, has experience in private practice and with the Office of the Attorney General Consumer Credit, Consumer Protection Division. And we're excited for him to join us and to start working with him. So that's about that. On bottom of page 96, we have some enforcement case highlights. One of the types of orders we sometimes issue that hasn't always been reflected in these reports are a couple orders to furnish information and allow investigation. Some of those went out if we try to conduct an investigation of a business and the business doesn't provide the requested information, that can get referred for an enforcement order to formally require the business to provide the information. So we have a couple outstanding orders to Chapter 348 motor vehicle dealer licensees on that issue. Again, just wanted to highlight that different issue that has come up. On page 98, we talk about rulemaking. The commission earlier this morning voted on the consent agenda to adopt one of our rulemaking actions. One of the ones we had planned for this meeting, the credit access business rule review, that's mentioned in the first bullet point under February 2024 on page 98, but that had to be delayed because of an error in the Texas Register. In how some of the figures accompanying those rules were displayed. But that error did get fixed, but it means for the adoption of those credit access business rules, we're postponing those until February.
Because the comment period had to be extended.
Yeah, we wanted to make sure there was a full 30-day public comment period after the corrected version was published. So we anticipate bringing those to the commission, bringing that adoption to the commission in February.
Are you still on rulemaking?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. But I want to say something before you finish rulemaking. So
I finished our rulemaking.
Okay.
I'm just going to move to federal rulemaking.
Okay, I just wanted to mention, I wanted to follow up on the discussion on the reporting of information related to cybersecurity attacks. And we've been talking about this internally and dealing, of course, with regulated entities that have had situations where they've had a cyber attack. And this is in response, I think, to Mr. Green's question about do we need to think about additional strengthening some reporting requirements or strengthening. We've been talking about some record keeping requirements potential and some reporting requirements because I feel like we could use some enhanced level of information related to those because of the impact on consumers and the consumer complaints. Yes, they have to report to the Attorney General's office, but they don't always report to us. And so we are talking about that internally and looking at that particular issue because I feel like we could strengthen and should strengthen that particular issue. I know it's happened. A number of states have dealt, other states have strengthened that, and I certainly think that that's something we should be talking about. So I just want to mention that. Thanks, Matt.
And one emerging item of federal rulemaking I want to mention, this isn't on our report, I anticipate we'll try to include some sort of summary in February, but just earlier this week, The Federal Trade Commission issued a final adopted rule on motor vehicle sales regulations. We had included back last year in August of 2022, our report discussed the proposal of that rule, but the final adopted rule has been issued by the FTC. It's scheduled to go into effect in July of 2024, and it would, among other things, prohibit motor vehicle dealers from making certain misrepresentations and motor vehicle sales, require accurate pricing disclosure in dealers' advertising and sales discussions, require dealers to obtain consumers' express informed consent for charges, prohibit the sale of add-on products or services that confer no benefit to the consumer, and require dealers to keep records of advertisements and certain transaction records. So, very significant piece of federal rulemaking. We're still working through the final adopted rule, and I anticipate we'll try to include some sort of synopsis of the rule when we come back in February.
It's pretty significant.
Right? Yeah. But that's all I had for this presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions about the legal department report.
Members, any questions today for Mr. Nance? Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. That's all we have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much. Any other comments? Members, just a few things from the chair's position. Please look ahead at the calendars for next year's meetings so we can get those booked on your hotel and travel plans.
So it is 2024.
2024.
It says 2023
on the. So are those the correct dates?
Those dates, I believe, are correct, but that's
it. It's
for the year.
Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Cerna, for plugging that for us. And thanks for our guest today. On behalf of the Finance Commission, I want to thank each and every one of you for committing your time and resources to make these meetings. I know it's not easy to always be here, but your commitment to this this task is very important, and I thank you for that. And I want to thank the three commissioners and other staff for a steady hand, giving us the opportunity to be a working partnership there. And so with that, everybody have a nice, safe travel season during the holidays, and we'll see you in February. And thank you. This concludes the business of our commission. The time is 10:05.